SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews,
taking you inside the sport of kings. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
This is a special edition of Night School Live on At the Races. Here are your hosts, Steve Bick, along with Jeremy Plunk.
A very good Tuesday, Night Schoolers. Happy to be with you. And coming out of the second leg of the Triple Crown, of course, happy to welcome in Caton Bradar, who was with us in Baltimore and is on the scene pretty much everywhere. Caton, good evening.
Hey, good evening. And actually now just home, which I'm happy to be in Kentucky. A little quiet time.
Reality is that you get these first, people think, oh, it's 2 weeks between Louisville and Baltimore. Not exactly. What about those 2 weeks or 2 months or 6 months leading up to Kentucky? It is a bit of a grind, and it's in a good way. We love doing it, but it is nice to get this, this little window of 10 days or so between Baltimore and down to Belmont, and I completely concur.
Oh, it's funny. You come to appreciate how much the 3 weeks could mean to a horse once you try to do it yourself.
Exactly right. Exactly right. They say there wasn't a Triple Crown winner for 37 years. Baloney. There was a legion of Triple Crown winners because they went from spot to spot and had to make the trip and had to make the circuit. Absolutely. Well, we're going to actually, I imagine, utilize some of what went on in Baltimore as part of the trip handicapping conversation tonight. And this is a topic that is always a great discussion point. It's something that isn't necessarily one of the first major handicapping experiences that players are introduced to. Certainly in the video age and the age of replays, it's much more upfront than it used to be, but it's something that takes a different kind of mastery. Talk about, Caton, your own experience in terms of, learning how to watch a race. And of course, you've got a particularly interesting background that gave you insight into a jockey's perspective and into race riding. But talk about how you cultivated your understanding of watching a race.
Well, it's an ongoing process, and I have to say that I continue to learn how to watch a race more effectively. And it is easier now than it once was from the standpoint of having the benefit of video and computer replay systems where we can constantly go back and watch again and again. So if you miss something the first time or even in the replay, you're not completely out of luck. You can definitely go back and watch as many times as you want. And also from the standpoint of the different vantage points, I thought, especially through the first two legs of the Triple Crown, when you had both an in-house feed and if you happen to DVR or tape and record the NBC broadcasts, or even here in Louisville for some of the races, Waves broadcasts, you got a lot of different vantage points, which all of which are very helpful in terms of kind of watching a race. But, the beauty of it and the devil of it is trying to figure out both what's happened and then to be able to interpret it going forward and what it really means. And I think that's, that's really truly what trip handicapping is all about. And the people that are very good at it are the ones, I think, that are able to not only catch what's happened or be able to pick up on trips and rough trips, but also be able to extrapolate from there what it means and whether it really did make a difference in the outcome of a race. And I think it's great that we talk, turf racing as well, it kind of incorporated into this topic, because when you get into The grass racing especially, I think that's where trips and watching a race unfold and become so even more critical than I think we see on the dirt all the time, although it's certainly there on the dirt too. But for me, both understanding how horses run or how horses exert themselves in the course of a race was really helpful in terms of sitting down and then applying that to watching in handicapping. And I think that anybody who's ever spent time on a horse's back, even I don't mean that you have to spend time on a horse's back. I just think it gives you a little bit of a jump start in the learning curve, because understanding momentum and that kind of the whether or not a horse will relax and what the signals are or the signs are of a horse that's relaxing in the course of a race versus a horse that's running all out all the time is really critical and important to it. And then, you know, it was interesting. I once heard Trevor Denman describing what he's watching when he's calling a race. And I found that really informative and helpful in terms of watching a race from my standpoint as a handicapper, because even though he's doing something very different, he's looking for the same things because he's trying to be able to capture the move before it happens. And, you know, in watching the body language of the jockeys as well as the horses, in seeing, you know, the hand positions and at what point do they gather horses up and at what point are they, you know, reserving the horses or taking a hold and such, those types of signals and clues are just as important as what's actually happening, whether a horse is changing paths or checking or decelerating or accelerating. So those are the things that, you know, those little details are the things that I think make or break your ability to watch races and extrapolate. And they also come into play in terms of pace and understanding, you know, you don't always learn everything from just the pure time of things. It's not just about how fast, but I've heard Richard Migliore say this, but it's how they do it quickly or slowly. And, you know, watching the body language of the horses and watching for the signals that a horse is either relaxed and comfortable while they're going through very fast fractions and well within themselves, or whether they're all out, it can tell you a lot, too, going forward for explaining what's happened and why it happens, but also what might happen the next time.
Well, the opportunity to watch races, to take trip notes, to incorporate it into a library of information that's at your fingertips, so many things that basically the computer age has made so much easier in terms of chronicling your horseplay and being able to go back and understand what happened better in terms of a horse's previous performance. That's the challenge and the opportunity. Certainly somebody that has proven it for many years, having turned in his day job to become a professional horse player. John Doyle can appreciate it, and not only can he appreciate it, he has gone out of his way to help other players, and whether it's the involvement with Derby Wars or in the new project Optics EQ that John has launched, he's proven repeatedly as a horse player that he wants people to do well at the game like he has done, and he joins us this evening. John, how you been?
Hey, Steve, how's it going?
Hello, outstanding. Heck. Good to connect with you and happy to have you on for this topic. And we knew early on that you would be part of the trip handicapping discussion, because even without the product that we'll talk about, this Optics EQ that you've launched, you were a guy that liked to take advantage of visual knowledge and having seen places where a horse may have run into trouble that wouldn't be apparent to the general public when the horse ran back.
Oh, yeah, you know, absolutely. And I love Kate because she was right on with all her points, I thought. The thing is there's really, you know, there's not many edges left in the game, right? I mean, people have taken a lot of this edge out. You know, you got the computer models, you got all this other thing going on. But one thing I think hasn't happened is kind of taking the qualitative stuff, clocker information, how the horse is performing, and how the horse actually performs on the track, how they warm up, all those different things, and somehow quantifying them, right? And I think that's kind of the last horizon, so to speak, in terms of, just kind of beating a dead horse, because, like I said, there's just so much information out there now, and it's like, this is the one area I think that's still sparse a little bit. And still opportunity, and you look at all the best players, and you look at guys that were successful in the NHC this past year. Most of those guys are trick handicappers, right? I mean, that's the edge. And I don't think there's been enough done commercially to kind of put some kind of thing on this, and that's what Optics is trying to do. It's trying to take this, and how do you do it? And then how do you do it in context? How do you document it, right? Because it's great to take good notes, but if they're not usable and you can't reuse them and you can't put them in context of the horse's form cycle, then they're not very useful. So that's been our objective.
As we and we'll introduce the Optics EQ product, that's opticseq.com. And before we do that, explain, John, the parameters and what you consider authentic trouble and how you typically had categorized race watching and how without the benefit, let's say, of a purchased product, people should be watching races and what they're looking for.
Yeah, it all started, the prerequisite of doing trip notes is doing some handicapping ahead of time. I don't believe in just kind of looking at the races, going back. I mean, you could do that. I'm not saying that. I just think the benefit is going to be if you handicap the races. You don't have to get into a lot of detail, but just you want to kind of get a sense of what the pace is going to be. And we got a great, I don't want to keep promoting, but we got a great plot, our product called Plot, which helps you kind of analyze the pace, how it's going to flow and so forth. It's very visual. But, you need to understand that. You need to kind of assess the horse in terms of where they are in their form cycle. And, need to understand tendencies, in terms of the horses, is this the right distance, surface, right? Is this the right, track for them? Do they do well at this track? I mean, those are the kinds of things you need to do going into the race. Because if you don't have that information, it's difficult to say, hey, this horse has kind of got an easy lead. Well, he was predicted to get on an easy lead. And, you need to kind of grade his performance accordingly, right? So it's good to do some pre-work. And I think that's kind of a missed aspect. And I think the other missed aspect is, like I said, is, once you've watched a race, how do you document it? Because if you're not consistent and you don't have a way of doing it, the next time you go look at that horse running, you're looking at notes that you're like, oh, and I forgot what this really was about. I forgot the importance. Did I really emphasize something or did I not? So you need to have a kind of a system on how to take notes, too. That's very important so that, going forward, you can really reuse those notes, right? I mean, there's a lot of good information even in the charts, right? Equibase and, I guess does all the track charts. And those guys are good. The problem is some of these things are both, some are not, and it's hard to kind of, ascertain really what's going on there, and it takes time. And what you really need to do is try to, cut that a little bit and try to really understand where the emphasis should be in terms of a trip. And again, you're not so much trying to describe what's going on. You're trying to define what's going on, right? You're trying to really understand. Kane said it. You're trying to interpret. And the only way you could do that is if you do that homework and preparation ahead of time. And it's a labor of love. Because if you do this right, it takes a lot of passion, takes a lot of work, and sometimes it's a grind. But when you do it and you get it right, oh, man, what a feeling. It's a great feeling.
There's no doubt. And a portion of this that does have to be included in the discussion is you still have to bet these horses right. Once you've discovered the opportunity, it doesn't mean that there's some guarantee of financial reward if you don't utilize what you've seen in a way that it becomes impactful and meaningful.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. But you start if you do this enough, like we've done. I think we have 80 some thousand trip notes in our database right now. If you do this enough, you start identifying areas where, areas. Like, for instance, I think sometimes with younger horses, developing horses, three-year-olds, even two-year-olds, but, three-year-olds and horses that are developing, especially on the turf. I know we were talking about the turf before. The thing is, sometimes speed figures can be really misleading in that area, right? Because these horses can improve leaps and bounds. And people will say, oh, my goodness, I can't believe this horse moved up 10, fire points or whatever speed figure you're using, right? And the trips help you identify those types of things because, you can see it, right? You can see, you can kind of, like I said, if you're following this stuff, if you're looking at trainer intent and, along with, the way the horse is kind of doing things and, different things like trouble, but also, horses that maybe need more distance, right? And, again, to go back on this whole thing about being prepared, because if you're not prepared, let's say a trip that you would interpret and it looks like the horse kind of runs out of gas in the stretch. Could be a turf race, right, and even a dirt race. You can interpret that three different ways. The horse needed the race, right? The horse needs a short distance, or the horse just has no grit, right? But if you don't have that context, it's very difficult to make those assertions unless you really got the context. So that's why it's important to kind of look at these races. And it's ahead of time to maybe understand. And if you keep a good set of notes, then you really do less. You don't have to do as much handicapping because the handicapping actually is the trip handicapping, right? It really is. And I talk to people who follow circuits, right? People that have really been really good over years and they follow circuits, it's because they get that nuance. They understand. They watch the trips, and they have an edge. Yeah, and you're right, Steve. It just doesn't translate to automatic. You got to know how to wager. Again, there's other, right? This makes it a great game because you have to have all these different types of skills, right? And so it doesn't automatically translate. But if you want to identify races and horses that are going to connect at prices, I think this is the method, the only method, really. Not the only method, but the most, I think the method most likely to do that for you.
We're talking to John Doyle, and John won the 2011 National Handicapping Championship. He had basically taken the greatest risk that any horse player can take by becoming a full-time player, and he has shown, like many, that while it isn't necessarily something everyone should try, it is possible, and there's such a running debate or commentary that people can't win long term playing horses. But the reality is there's many people, and it's kind of funny that guys like you and Paul Matisse, Paul's going to be on at the races tomorrow morning, that are professional horse players. They're making a living. obviously, it is possible. So there is, to me, a lot of inspiration in guys like Paul and like John Doyle. And when you then take your professional know-how, John, and your avocation know-how, and you work on a project that manifests itself as Optics EQ, it also shows a generosity, because even though this is a product that people are going to pay for the information, you wouldn't do this if you weren't looking to help people do better playing the game.
Yeah, exactly. Steve, I feel like you have to give back a little bit, and right, it's a labor of love more than anything, but I would have never learned the game if it wasn't for guys like Steve Zawidowicz and Andy Beyer and, I can name the list, right? There's even, Mark Kramer. That's how I started learning the game, reading about it and so forth. And then, Carrie Photius was a mentor of mine way back, And so, this is how I kind of came up and learned the game. So I feel like, this is my turn, to kind of give back. And, part of my Eclipse speech when I won the NHC was to do this. So I got one more leg after this, right? It's horse aftercare. But I'm like kind of going incrementally, right? It was the contest space, which I got involved with in Derby Wars, and now, you know, it's this, and then, you know, eventually it's going to be the aftercare. I just got to do things sequentially, just the way I am. But you know, it's important to me, and it, you know, we're not selling picks. That's not what we're selling. We're not selling the system. We're selling information, quality information from a bunch of great people that I'm working with. You know, the people that lead up our, you know, team are terrific. Emily Gullickson and, you know, and Donald Harris, who were both were clockers in their old day. And Donald's still a clocker. And so, you know, I'm just trying to kind of give back in that sense. And, you know, hopefully we can make a business out of it, too. We're not going to kid ourselves. But that's the goal. And I think, I think this is just trying to take this to the next level, right? Because I think we've done a good job of, you know, like I said, there's been so much stuff on the computer side of things, but I think trying to quantify some of this qualitative stuff is kind of what we're all about.
Hey, John, I have a quick question. How often do you find that as you're watching a race, you sense a bad trip or you think you see something, and then you go back and you watch it and you evaluate it differently than you did when you watched it the first time?
You know, I don't change much, right? I guess the reason is, again, I don't overrate trouble. And that's a tendency when you're first doing it, to overrate trouble. Like, because when we take our team through, like, our – because we got a training program, we bring a new note taker into it, you know, their tendency is, oh, that horse is in traffic. Well, that, and I'm like, no, that's not really traffic, right? So, you know, it's just years of experience. I don't anymore kind of overrate – I don't think I overrate that stuff. And but, you know, there's subtleties, though, that there's things that you do miss, and, you know, you start looking at the head-on. And I would say the other thing is when you're watching this stuff on video versus live, right, there's always different things. The quality of the signals are different. You know, you get the high def, right, which is important to understand. That's terrific. But then most of it's not high def. And then even the head-ons are different, right? You got some of those grass races in Gulfstream, and you're like, you know, you feel like you're watching the race sideways, right? You're on a boat or something, and it's tilted all the way one way. I'm like, I have no idea, right? When they do the inquiries and they try to say, they can't even figure it out because it's such a tough angle, right? It's not a head-on, really. It's a sideways angle. So, you know, the thing is about this whole thing is just takes a lot of work, and you got to kind of go over and over and over and over it again. You know, sometimes you get really bleary-eyed, but you got to kind of stick with it. But you know, for me, you know, I've been doing this even before, for years before I even started this company. So, like I said, I'm pretty experienced at it. I kind of know when I see it. You know, it's one of those things. You just and you know, there's other things what we call. We have a keyword in our dictionary called better than luck, because you know a horse better than he actually looked, right? There's subtle things about the trip. You just know, you know, they got a ton of horse in there, and there's just certain things that about that that horse in that race that, you know, you can't define it sometimes, but you know it.
Yeah, and that, you know, that is part of that's part of being in tune with your own comprehension of what's happening out there. And there's a certain confidence level, John, that I'm sure, you know, many listening understand the reference, and certainly you would, that I think everybody that reaches a level of proficiency, they got there not because they had accrued a certain amount of information or not because they cashed a ticket, but it's an agglomeration of all of that. It's you know, it's being able to distill everything that you experience in the process and then having the confidence in your own ability to believe what you think you saw and then acting on it. And it's a pretty fascinating exercise in I think, in personal growth and satisfaction that, you know, you get to a point where, you know, you just know that you know better than the majority of people you're betting against. And, you know, that's when you're a horse player of note.
Well, you know, Steve, and you know, like, I'm an analytic still, even though I love watching races and I believe there's a quality, I'm still an analytic at heart. You know, that's a little bit of my background. So what we do, and the reason why we set our system up the way we did with these keywords, was so that we can analyze, A, first of all, you know, are we really getting this right? You know, are the words we think, like trouble, better than luck, are those really paying off for us, or we got it wrong? And so what we do is, why we set this up, and you'll see in our system we have green and red, is because analytically we looked at this database of 80,000, you know, notes and stuff like that. We realized that horses either improve or regress, you know, based on certain trips, right? In context, right? I mean, I don't want to oversimplify, but, you know, you kind of look at the website and you'll get an idea of all this stuff. But so what this does for the consumer is that when you go and look at our stuff, you can really kind of just look down a horse's thing. You see a lot of red, that's not good. You know, because either the horse doesn't finish, doesn't change leads, you know, those types of things, right? And you see a green and you're like, whoa, this is a different story, right? This horse is showing some stuff. And, you know, basically, if you're seeing green and you're seeing a good price up there, you want to just pay attention. I'm not saying it may be an automatic bet, but you want to actually pay attention. And, you know, that makes, you know, all this hard work worthwhile, because now it's like, now I don't have to figure out what I did, you know, 3 months ago. You know, I knew I liked the horse at Gulfstream, but, you know, I can't remember. You know, I've done so many of these things, I don't remember. This what helps you to kind of do that. It's, you know, having the rigor and having a disciplined documentation system to support what you're seeing is very important.
Absolutely, and that's a portion of this equation that we stress over and over again, and that includes going back, you know, all the work that people put into handicapping and a day at the races, and then if you didn't do well, the tendency is to turn the page and go on to, you know, if it was Saturday that you didn't do well, all right, let's dive into Sunday. Well, no. You got to go back, and you've got to make sure you can get something, you know, all right, you lost the money, but don't lose the money and not get anything out of it. Go back and see what went wrong. And in some cases, you may find out that you didn't do anything wrong. There were some exactly. Extenuating circumstances. Look at Saturday at Pimlico. There was a rare dead turf rail where the inside was absolutely deadly. And, you know, that's one of the things. I mean, if you were betting horses that on paper should have saved ground and done well, you didn't do anything wrong. The turf just held you back and conspired against you. But make sure you understand that for going forward.
Right, because that's an opportunity, right? I mean, that's a huge
absolutely.
Opportunity. Right, so that's the, you know, absolutely. And the other thing we do, too, is like you gotta remain, it's hard, you know, sometimes. You know, that's why we have, you know, there's a team of ours. So that we could be a little bit more objective, right? Because, you know, if you have a tough beat, like, please take this race from me, because I don't know if I could be objective, right? So, you know, like, I had a tough beat in this race, so please take this race, and you look at it. You know, I've done the initial work on it. You look at it. And that's what's great about the team I have, because, you know, we share these races. We do have team meetings to kind of review, and we challenge each other. And sometimes it gets interesting, you know? We challenge each other on, hey, what are you thinking there, you know? And I think that's important. Like, I don't think horse players do that enough. They don't challenge themselves, don't challenge each other. And I think that's an important part, and that's also a part of what goes into our product.
Well, John, we'll talk about optics, EQ on at the races. You and I exchanged email in March and April, so we got to get you on the show and talk more about it. But for now, we'll explain to people optics, optixeq.com. John Doyle and his team will help you through it and understand it. Check out what they're doing, because they're making trip notes and trip handicapping more tangible and more approachable from a, you know, from a professional service side of things, and it's very unique, and it's a big undertaking, and it looks like it's been beautifully done. So, John, we'll look forward to talking. Always a pleasure to connect with you, and continued success.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. Thanks, Caden.
Thanks, John.
Okay. John Doyle, your 2011 NHC champion, and a guy that has really everything that he gets out of the game, he's plowed right back in, whether it was as a partner with Derby Wars, whether it's with this Optics EQ that looks like a tangible, helpful, utilizable trip handicapping product. We wish John all the best. We're half an hour into this 90-minute excursion, trip handicapping, turf handicapping. Caton is going to jump on to the chat, and Jeremy's going to jump in. Toby Terrell's going to be with us in the last half hour when we come back. Andy Serling of the New York Racing Association. Andy, of course, created Trips and Traps on the NYRA website and at YouTube, the first really of its kind, a show that shows you horses that benefited from bias or from race flow and race dynamics, those that worked against, and then how you can bet them successfully. He joins us next, back after this on Night School.
Night School is brought to you by the American Quarter Horse Association, home of the fastest athletes. For more, visit AQHA.com. And by Keeneland Select, the official online wagering home of the historic Keeneland Racecourse. Sign up and get a $150 bonus and enjoy no-fee online wagering.
It's our eyes and your prize. It's time to get buzzed. Horse Player Now Buzz Report brings top handicappers from around the world from our email box to yours. Our starting nine includes such renowned horse players as Caton Bradar, Brian W. Spencer, Jerry Schottenkirk, Candace Hare, Brian Natto, Terry Terrell, Jeff Nahill, DC Dino Herrera, and Jeremy Plunk. Put your starting nine together every single day with daily, monthly, and quarterly plans that reduce the price to as low as just $2 a day. We say it's our eyes and your prize, and we promise nothing but the best. Honesty and trust, no other promises. Pick up the buzz today.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Looking for some excitement? Get away to Mountaineer Casino Racetrack and Resort. The gaming action sizzles, from slots to video poker to hot table game action. There's more winning excitement at Mountaineer. Stay in our newly renovated hotel rooms. Enjoy new menus in 6 restaurants. Heat up your nights with live entertainment. Play a round of golf. Enjoy the thrills of live thoroughbred racing or relax in our spa. Get in on it all at Mountaineer. Mountaineer Casino Racetrack and Resort. West Virginia Lottery, West Virginia Lottery Table Games.
Night School is proudly presented each week by Woodbine Entertainment, featuring Woodbine Racetrack and Mohawk Raceway. The 2016 thoroughbred racing season runs April through December. And by Mountaineer Casino Racetrack and Resort, home of the Grade 2 West Virginia Derby, to be held this summer on August 6th.
We are back on Night School, second half hour on this 90 Minutes, and welcome in Jeremy Plonk.
I was enjoying the break. I kind of had my feet up. I was doing the live chat. That's a great way to take in Night School, Steve. We ought to try it more often.
Yeah, there you go. Well, and as we will look to have Andy Serling join us, Terry Terrell is going to be with us in the third half hour. And Jeremy, as we look to Andy, your overview on the topic, trip and turf handicapping.
Well, I like what John said in that John Doyle in our first segment about keeping everything in context, because I think there's an overreaction and a cliche amongst trip handicappers a lot of times, in that we see a jockey take up on a horse. We see a horse try to get through on the rail and get squeezed, and all of a sudden everybody jumps on that. And they find that to be the definition of trip handicapping, the obvious trouble. And then I think that gets overrated a lot of times. That, oh, this horse definitely would have won last time, so he's an automatic bet back this time. Well, everybody sees the same thing, Steve. So those horses are going to be underlaced, and the next field they match up with may not put them in that same position they were. Maybe they were in position to win and got stopped in the stretch last time. But they could be back against a tougher field this time or a whole different set of pace circumstances. And people take a horse completely out of context in terms of that trouble that they got, and it just becomes an automatic bet back for you. I think it's very, very important to keep all of the context of trip handicapping in your portfolio, be flexible, and oftentimes you will find, if you keep good trip notes, you may find multiple horses in the same race coming back off of similar trip notes, or equally egregious trip notes, where you might find you have two or three notes on horses in the same race. You still have to go through the handicapping diligence then of, okay, which horse does this particular race set up for? Is this horse better for today's distance? Where are they in their form cycle? Is their first, second start back off a layoff? Is this their seventh start of the year, and they're starting to show signs of wear and tear? So I think you have to keep every horse in context, and don't be cliched when it comes to trip handicapping, because I find some very good handicappers fall victim to that.
Going to welcome in Andy Serling of the New York Racing Association, who pretty much created, for the most part, the trip handicapping concept. And, oh, we just lost him. Oh, boy. All right. Get Andy back, and we'll have start to his view of things. And, you know, as I mentioned, with Trips and Traps, the show that, gosh, it's probably been 4 or 5 years already, and maybe it might even be more. But Trips and Traps, if there's one video presentation that you can watch as a neophyte player that will give you the benefit of description of how a race is unfolding and how and why a horse is either benefiting or being held back by circumstance. Trips and Traps, even if they're old ones, it doesn't even matter if it's horses that have retired. Just the way Andy and for a long time was Eric Donovan, now it's Andy and Rich Migliori, who of course has another unique perspective as a rider, of winner of over 4,500 races. So Trips and Traps as really an invaluable tool, and trying to get Andy locked in here. And Casey telling me no? Yes? Having a phone difficulty with getting Andy on the line. So hang in there a minute and we'll talk. I mentioned there at the end with John Doyle, one of the big takeaways from Saturday was really that turf course and the way in which it was so difficult for horses down on the inside. The turf was good. It was not an unfair course, except that you would have preferred to have been in the outside paths than down inside. And that doesn't happen all that often. And so, you know, the horses that, like for instance, you know, I talked to Bernie Flint today about his winner in the Gallarette. And All the horses you'll see in that race came from the outside. Andy Serling, I think, is with us from the New York Racing Association. Good evening.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Andy, I was giving everybody a little, for those that, if they haven't come across Trips and Traps yet, trying to explain.
Steve?
Yeah.
Steve, I don't do Trips and Traps these days. I know you've obviously been keeping up on the show, but I haven't basically been on it once in the last 4 months, maybe 5 months.
I'm explaining that Trips and Traps set.
Well, you know.
We've discussed it on the show, but I'm making the point that the product over the last 5+ years as a way to have races explained to fledgling players how a race works against certain horses or for certain horses and how to interpret that information, that's the, you know, the real nuts and bolts of trip handicapping comprehension.
I hope so. I don't know. I haven't seen it lately.
For your, as a foundation for a young newcomer to the game, when somebody says, you know, learn how to watch a race, what should they be looking for?
Well, you know, I think people should just watch races. I think just by watching as many races you can and with a sort of open mind, thinking about them and thinking about horses and what, you know, happened to them that might have been a deterrent to them running their best race or vice versa, might have helped them run, you know, run as well as they did. You know, and understanding sort of the horses in it. I mean, it's work. It's important. I think that the races themselves. I mean, there's two things. There's three parts of being a horse player, I guess. I probably leave things out, at least for me. You know, I'm not a physical guy, so I can't talk about, you know, looking at them in the paddock and looking at the track. But for me, it's handicapping. It's handicapping, which I find, you know, endlessly fascinating. It's betting. Because there's so many facets to betting, and you know, what do you do with your selection? You know, how do you make money with a selection? And watching races and trying to understand, you know, your horse and the other horses. Why did horses run better than you expected them to? Why did they run worse if they did? And you know, and watching races and trying to determine which horses were potentially helped or which horses were hindered by how the race was run. Not really trouble. You know, trouble's sort of obvious. Obviously, horses, you know, the start is very important. Starts are good to watch, head-ons at starts, and seeing horses that get bounced around and taken out of position, you know, because the position you establish early, it doesn't really require that much energy to get to that spot. Yet some horses are going to be in better spots than others. And one of the reasons horses that are particularly good form frequently do well is they break sharply, you know, unless, you know, they're interfered with, which sometimes you can't do anything about. But, you know, all things being fair, they'll break sharply and put themselves in a good position. So it'll be easier for them, you know, to win without expending as much energy as perhaps a horse that doesn't break well and he, you know, finds himself 2-3 lengths behind where he would have been. He might have only broken a half to a length slow, but at the time that sort of the dust settles, he's sort of out of position. So I think it's watching races and seeing how events affect the outcomes and understanding dynamics of races. Because I think that race watching has a lot to do with understanding race flows. Was it a race that just as it was that collapsed? Was it a race where the pace held together? Was it because of the pace? Was it because of the nature of the horses in it? And I mean, sometimes a race may fear to fall apart, and it just happens that all the good horses were closers. You know, was that really the dynamics, or was it just the quality of the horses? And it's all part of a big learning process, and also just a sort of enormous amount of information to think about. And listen, it depends. You know, I have the luxury of having no life other than playing the horses and handicapping. So I can spend a lot more time than the average person. But, and you know, I hope that I can pass some of this along and do some of the work for other people. It's sort of my job. I hope I'm sometimes successful at this. But as far as watching races, it's just, you know, thinking about it in a very, sometimes in the abstract, but also a very big picture way of looking at it, as opposed to just saying, oh, that horse had trouble. Therefore, he should have run better, you know? Does that make sense?
It does, and so does, you know, so does, as we were reaching out for you, Jeremy talked about, you know, as you right away mentioned, the obvious trouble. What is the most subtle trip, the one that is not apparent to the easily to the naked eye?
You know, I don't know that I wouldn't want to define one at the exclusion of another, Steve, but probably starts, you know, this is something that, you know, Richie and I talked about frequently on Trips and Traps, and it's something that Richie and I very strongly both agree about, you know, that you know, the starts have such a big factor that I think people really, it's hard, you know, unless you're really paying attention or watching head-ons and doing these things, to really sort of be in touch with how important the start is, you know what I mean? And you really should watch and like sort of, you know, watch the starts and, you know, freeze it a little bit after the start and say to yourself, you know, which horses were negatively affected by it, you know? And it's so probably the trouble that people miss is sort of stuff that doesn't seem like it's that important, but it was, you know? Does that make sense?
It does. And you know, when you do a pre-race prattle, very often, you know, what separates, you know, your presentation from most or all others is that rather than talk about the past performance, it's a specific incident or a specific element of a previous race or several previous races that is potentially going to be different today for a horse, whether it's a horse that's been suffering inside draws versus now maybe being out in the open air.
Yeah, no, I try to do that. I mean, you don't want to talk so much that you're boring people to death and they're just going to turn you off. The idea is theoretically to get people to listen to us. So you want to find what's the most important thing to say about each horse, you know? Well, it got this positive trip in the last two starts or last start or whatever that made it look better than it was. And because of these circumstances today, it very well may not happen today. Or, you know, vice versa, you know, sort of negative situation. I mean, when there's nothing better than a horse that's got legitimate buried sort of trips or excuses or whatever, even if it's the long surface, long distance, or, you know, it doesn't have to be a trip to be an excuse. And then it comes into a race where there's a real, you know, a legitimate possibility that things will go its own way and it's under the right circumstances. I mean, obviously those aren't the kind of bets that show up on a daily basis, but having said that, they're the best kind of bets you can probably find.
Part of tonight's topic and over wrap involves turf handicapping as a portion of this, and turf is thought of, I suppose, more often as, you know, being very much a place where trips are going to manifest themselves. The race flows are different. It can have speed, but it isn't necessarily where speed dominates. And so the subtleties of pace come more into bear. And, you know, how should people differentiate race watching between turf and main track?
Well, I mean, I think what you're trying to say is that the best horse is going to win in certain, you know, whereas dirt racing, you know, speed is rewarded in a way of dirt racing in this country, that it's not going to be in fairly run turf races. Obviously, you know, when you get a situation in the summer at tracks or, you know, the winter in Florida where the turf gets very firm, you don't get rain, or you get in Saratoga or something, you know, it can create a bias. There aren't usually that biases. Biases in turf racing is infrequent, not impossible, but infrequent. But theoretically, you know, dirt is just, even without a bias, dirt is speed is rewarded in dirt racing in ways it isn't, I think, in turf racing. So, I mean, trips, I don't, you know, I think it's a lot of it's sort of like anything, you know. Were they just against the, I mean, a horse can be against the race rule in a turf race, it can have a slow pace and it just doesn't work out for it. But, you know, I don't know, getting buried inside of horses, I mean, there are a whole variety of reasons. There's a lot of things, some of them obvious. Well, a lot of stuff's fairly obvious, at least, isn't it? You know, I mean, you could have a race flow, I guess, against a horse in the turf as much as dirt. It's just not as likely to be a factor. I mean, some horses are different. You know, in New York, the inner turf course at Belmont is very different than the Widener turf course. The mile in it, you know, the Widener course, especially in doing these mile, you know, in a 16th races and mile races, I think closers have an inherent advantage. They just seem to, you know, the moves of the 3/16ths of the eighth pole are effective, whereas the inner turf, having speed, maybe some of it because of the sharp, you know, the way that the natural way the race, the courses are made up, you know, with the sharp turn, the dog leg at a mile and 16th, or hitting the turn very quickly at a mile and 8th, it'll favor speed horses because they're able to go slower up front. The paces are naturally slower. And it seems like those races are one of the 5/16ths to a quarter pole. If you look at them over time, I think you'll find that's the case.
How much do you subscribe to the theory of a horse, Andy, that is a constant trip horse, meaning a horse that once, twice, three times in a row, you know, is finding trouble. This is the race where he's, you know,
they're a problem for horse players. There's no doubt about it. I think, you know, Steve, I think anything comes down to price. I mean, you know, the problem with those kind of horses is, I'm as big a sucker sometimes for these horses as anybody. I'm not in any way saying that, like, you know, I'm the great sage that has gotten past losing my money in those horses. As you know, I have a bad habit of doing it. I think we all have those sort of bad habits. You try to get away from them. But if they're big prices, it's hard to get away from. You know what I mean? I mean, if you think this horse finally gets his trip today and it's good enough to win and it's, you know, 12-1, how do you not bet it? Whereas if it's 7-2 and, you know, it continually finds itself in trouble, you probably don't want to bet it. So I think that's partly a price sort of play thing, I guess.
It's a funny, it is funny. And of course, in this age of Twitter, where, you know, there's a chance for, you know, for a horse to become a snowball rolling down a hill.
Sure. I mean, I think, and we're all, it's sort of a human nature thing a little bit to none of us want to admit we're wrong. You know, we will do it, and sometimes you have no choice but to do it. You're faced with an argument you can't win. And it's good to admit you're wrong and move on. I mean, that's something that we all should do more, every one of us, myself included. And I try to do that, sometimes a little bit too hard. You know, sometimes I'll give up a little quickly. But, you know, you're going to have to be ready to say, yeah, I like this horse. Okay, it had a little bit of trouble, but was it really going to win anyway, you know? And I think you have to be – it's just like – and I think Jeremy talked about it a little earlier. And it's, you know, you can't just – focus on the trouble, you know, try to take a bit more broad view of it. There was a horse, well, you know, here's a horse that I wonder about. Go Maggie Go got left in the Kentucky Oaks, no doubt about it, right? And it changed the dynamic for her. She's a horse that's normally involved in the pace, and she's shown three or four starts. It turns out she's involved in the pace. She's a very game horse. But, you know, after having that trouble in Kentucky Oaks, she got a very good ride. She stayed ground the whole way. The pace was pretty contested, so had she been part of it, it's hard to imagine it would have been beneficial to her. So, for me, looking at the Black-Eyed Susan, a lot of people were saying, oh, she had a bad trip. I'm thinking, I don't know. She kind of broke a little slow and put her out of position. But she got a great ride thereafter, and she saved ground, and Landover Sea was three wide at least the whole trip. She ran the better race. Why would I possibly want Go Maggie Go? Now, as it turns out, Landover Sea obviously had a lousy trip and didn't, you know, have a chance to strut her stuff. But when Go Maggie Go broke, he went the lead with her. There were other steeds in there. The 9 and 10 were both steeds. Go Maggie Go outran both of them, and she controlled the race. Now, forget about the fact that Landover Sea had a trouble. That is what it is. But maybe what Go Maggie Go showed was trouble that keeps her from being in front. Is trouble for her, you know, because she's a horse that can only be effective if she's in front. So that was enough trouble for her, just the fact that she wasn't where she wants to be. And maybe
that's a great example.
Not a horse that can rate her at this point in her career. And, you know, we talk about that. Nevada Kid was a horse at Aqueduct that I had liked one day in March. And I pointed out that the horse has never won a race rating. And, you know, and Jeremiah Englehart trains the horse, and he and I are friendly, and I had sort of mentioned it to him, and the rider rated him, and he got nothing. And I sort of talked to Jeremiah. We may even talked about it on Twitter and said, you know, how is that a ride? It was in the image test stands, and he was not happy with it. And the next time the horse ran, now to be fair, it was on April 7th, which was a day where speed was dynamite. But he went to the lead. He set him aggressively. He was ahead of a 4-5 shot. He outran that horse early and wired the field. The next time he ran, the rider rated him back and forth, and he got nothing. So why would you possibly ever rate this? Sometimes you may get outrun to the lead or you don't break well, and you know, you have no choice. But assuming you break well and you can make it up, you're supposed to send that horse. If it doesn't make the lead, it's not going to win. It may make the lead and still lose, but it has no chance of winning if you don't go to the lead. So you have to say, why would, you know, a trainer give instructions? I'm not saying the trainer in this case did, on some of these horses. These are horses that have to have the lead to win. So to me, a bad trip is any time the horse is taken off the pace. You didn't have a bad trip. You just had a trip it couldn't win with, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that's something that probably, I think it gets overlooked. And, you know, as we've gotten into today's age of racing, where these riders are intent on rating horses all the time, and as I think the late Alan Jerkins said, trying to change evolution, you know, this happens. And there's some horses that just, they're not going to win without the lead. Sometimes they have no choice. They can't get it or the break. But sometimes the rider just takes them out of their natural style, and that gives them no chance. So to me, that's an excuse, right or wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a different kind of a trip, but it absolutely nets the same result. It's a occurrence that inhibited the horse from success, and now you're trying to interpret if the circumstance is going to be different in this setting that he can or she can be successful, and that's all we're ever looking for.
And in fairness to Go Maggie Go, he stalked. She stalked in her second start in Gulfstream Oaks. So she doesn't appear to be a total need-to-lead type horse, but she probably is not a horse that wants to sit behind horses and eat dirt or anything. You know, she wants to be out in the clear or in front.
Exactly. Exactly. Jeremy, with a point.
Andy, question for you. When you have a horse you're looking to bet back off of something that you've seen, if that horse doesn't fire the way you think first time back, do you stick with that note and kind of follow that horse another time or two, or do you give them one shot for the excuse you found?
I think it's a very good question and an eternally a question with no answer. I'll tell you, when I roomed with Andy Fire back in the mid-90s in Florida, and we were playing Gulfstream in the winter, I remember talking to him about he would be very unforgiving. You know, he'd like some horse at a big price. He'd bet it, and the horse would not run well, and just, you know, it wouldn't run well. And he would often not give them another chance. And I noticed a couple of them winning and running well. And I'd say to Andy, you know, did you play that horse at all today? And he'd say, no, why? And I'd say, well, you bet it last time. And he said, well, I bet last time I ran poorly. And I'd say, well, yeah, but you saw enough about the horse to think the horse had a chance in a very similar spot, and it didn't run well. But it seems to me that there's a method to your madness. And even if the horse doesn't show it once, I'm not saying you should bet the same amount the second time unless you really feel there's an excuse. Just sort of on principle, you know, bet $100 on the horse or $50 on the horse just so that when it wins or something, it's 20-1. You know, you get paid for something with a good opinion. I think, you know, Jeremy, it's really, these things are really price effective. You have to find the fine line between trusting yourself and not just defending yourself, right? Not just sort of saying, I wasn't wrong, damn it. You know, I'm going to keep betting this horse. I'll prove by losing more money that I don't have a bad opinion about this horse. And, you know, we all have to accept the fact that we all have bad opinions about horses a lot of the time. It's just the nature of the game. So, you know, I think these things are priced, you know. Don't make excuses for us to come back at reasonably short prices, but if you want to make an excuse, they're a big price again. You know, I don't think that's the worst thing you can do.
It takes a couple times until you realize you're a dumbass sometimes. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true, though. You know, I mean, I think it's part of the humble, you know, making us humble and, you know, an understanding that as good as our opinion may be, and there are a lot of guys out there with really good opinions, you know. We're still wrong a lot of the time, and part of being a good handicapper is figuring out when you actually were just wrong, you know?
Well, that's going back and looking at the race and seeing if you missed something or if circumstances just were out of your control.
Yeah. Right. And it's, you know, and we're still going to be wrong when we evaluate that. But the more you do it, you know, the more, you know, it's very interesting to me as somebody who spent his life at the racetrack, not just playing, but I'm one of the few people that goes to the track every day. And I'm, you know, still, and I spend a lot of time at the track. How many people I know in the game that are not introspective? Yet, there's no game you'll find that you benefit more from being introspective than playing the horses.
Yeah. No, that's a whole separate topic.
It's
not
a discussion, but it's a reality of horseplay. And any, I don't think it's just horse players. I think you could say it about riders and trainers, and you know anybody, and owners, people that are spending money and buying. You know, self analysis, self evaluation, and it's something that, you know, how can it not be a huge benefit to you in life, but especially in playing horses or being involved in horse racing.
Agreed. Andy, I know you're pulling up, but one last question. How much does jockey change affect the evaluation of potential bet back, somebody getting on a horse who maybe suits a horse better than previous rider or riders?
Yeah, I think that's something you have to think about. I think you have to try to handicap, you know, what are the tendencies of some riders as opposed to others, who are the guys that are more prepared, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I think it's part of your play. I mean, we're very spoiled in New York, and that a high percentage of the riders, at least, you know, for 8 months of the year, you know, the winter is a little less so, but, you know, for a good portion of the year, the riders are all so good that you don't have to spend that much time worrying about it. In general, you're going to get good rides on, you know, the horses that you bet. So I don't really worry that much about riders, but I do look at rider changes and see if I think it matters, and it can. But in New York, most of these guys are pretty good. So I don't, you know, I know I act like I don't think they are, but one of the reasons I don't pay much attention to riders is I think the guys in New York are just, they're really good, you know, and in general, you're not supposed to have to worry about it. Doesn't mean you shouldn't sort of be aware of what some of their tendencies might be. And there are some riders that are successful, but they're, you know, less aggressive than other guys. And I think one of the reasons that Jose Ortiz has been doing as well as he has is that he is doing a good job adapting to his horses and being aggressive.
Well, Andy, appreciate this as one of the top race watchers and somebody who relies on the visual aspect of previous past performance as much as anything that's on the paper. Enjoy the hoops, and thanks so much for doing this tonight.
Thanks, guys, for doing this. I mean, you know, I know that you're sort of a carpetbagger on this, but Jeremy's been doing this for about 5 years now, and it's a great thing.
So unbelievable.
I'm always happy to... Well, you are. So you can, Jeremy, I just said it to you. You know, I just want to get it out there. But no, you guys do a terrific thing, and I hope people are taking advantage of it, and it's a really good thing that you're doing. So thanks for letting me.
Appreciate the kind words.
Take care. Bye bye.
Andy Serling, the one and only double helping. A double scoop of Andy today. I got a half an hour earful from him today, too, on At the Races. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Terry Terrell joins us with a little eye toward the quarter horse side of trip handicapping. Don't blink because you'll miss the trip. But, of course, Terry also very accomplished with the flats in terms of full size racing ovals beside quarter miles and hundreds of yards. Back after this third half hour of Night School on this Tuesday, Jeremy and I are joined by Terry Terrell next.
Night School is brought to you by TwinSpires.com, the official online wagering home of the Kentucky Derby and the popular TwinSpires players pools. And by BrizNet, the official past performance provider to Night School. Check out the exceptional and exclusive PPs endorsed by Night School at BrizNet.com.
I've never experienced anything like it. I thought to myself, this could be today. Why not today? And it was. The horse went from last to first and won by a nose. Winning the NAC changed my life. It never would have happened without TwinSpires.com. I won a TwinSpires qualifying tournament and went on to take the $1 million prize.
Play at TwinSpires.com, and you could be the next one to hit it big.
$2 million National Handicapping Championship Tour today and plan your trip to Las Vegas. Visit NHCTour.com for details.
Next on FAQ 60, the morning line. The morning line odds are not a prediction of each horse's probability of winning a race. Rather, they're a prediction of how the public will bet the race. Once betting begins, the morning line odds are replaced with the actual odds. There are two ways you can use morning line odds to your advantage. First, the morning line helps a horse player determine overlay or underlay values. If a horse's current odds are over the projected morning line odds, that's an overlay, and it can be a great value bet. Second, morning line odds are significant to players making multi-race bets like the Daily Double and Pick Four. Those early morning line projections often attract the most money in the multi-race pools, which decreases your potential payout. This FAQ 60 is presented by AQHA Racing and Horse Player Now. For more, go to AQHARacing.com.
Strategize, analyze, select. Join Keeneland Select to bet on racing from around the world on your computer, tablet, or smartphone, anytime, anywhere. Featuring the best rewards in racing, free pass performances, live video, race replays, and more. Plus, Keeneland Select invests a portion of its profits back into the sport. Join Keeneland Select today and earn a $150 sign-up bonus at KeenelandSelect.com. Dedicated to the sport and dedicated to the players.
Night School is brought to you by the American Quarter Horse Association. Follow the AQHA Horse Player Now official top 10 poll each week at AQHARacing.com. And by Keeneland Select. Earn $50 directly into your account with each $5,000 wagered. And take advantage of one of the industry's most generous players reward programs.
We're back on Night School, and happy to welcome Terry Terrell, American Quarter Horse Association, and a lot of the action that you figure would be involved in race watching and trip handicapping. It's got to be instantaneous, almost like a visual snapshot when the quarters come rolling out of the gate. Terry, good evening.
Good evening. How are you guys?
Excellent. Jeremy with me as well, of course. Jeremy, say hello to Terry.
Terry T, good to have you, my man. How are things on the West Coast?
Everything's good, JP. How are you?
Great. We're going to talk some thoroughbreds and some quarters with you tonight, Terry. So, Steve, let's hit him on the thoroughbred side first, and then we'll pivot to the quarters for the second half of the segment. Terry's been a syndicated handicapper in Southern California. Used to do harness morning lines. I think if there's a breed and they race, Terry has bet on it over the years.
Going all the way back to mules, too.
We love the mules. We love the mules. Unbelievable. Well, you know, Terry, basically we've started each of these conversations with Andy Serling and earlier with John Doyle and with Caton and with Jeremy in terms of your accrual of understanding when it comes to race watching and to, you know, creating a system for yourself that you use. Give us the thumbnail sketch of what goes into race watching turf and trip handicapping and how you prepare yourself coming out of a race looking forward to other opportunities down the road.
Well, basically, in just a couple of words, I would say that your observation, an objective observation, is probably critical, maybe more than 50% of your handicapping tool that you use. And it's basically your opinion, and it's your observation that you take from watching many thousands of races and what you take into the race, and so many things that your other guests have so adequately explained that go into a race, thousands and thousands of different little things that could go into, but observation is the key.
In terms of being able to understand, as you develop as a player, we've got a lot of night schoolers that are fairly new to the game. Kind of overwhelming, and you watch a race unfold. There may be 10 horses. How do you concentrate? How many times do you watch a race? How do you focus your eyes? Do you watch each individual horse and watch it, 8-10 times? What are the mechanics when you sit down to race watch?
Well, naturally, if you're wagering on the race, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to watch your horse. What I try to do, even when I'm wagering on a race, is I try to take the whole race into context, where my horse is, and if that's where I want my horse to be at that particular point in the race. So I'm watching the entire race, paying a great importance to the pace of the race and how the race is unfolding, if it unfolds as to how I envision it. And I think when you handicap a race, you have to envision how the race is going to be run. And you see that in almost every handicapping program or anything that you watch on television, that they're always asked, how do you envision this race to unfold, and where do you think you're going to be in the race? And that's what you do as a handicapper, or that's what you do as just a fan. Is the more you're at the race, the more you will have an opinion as to where your horse will be and how the race will unfold. So you make your own evaluation and opinion, and you as the race unfolds, that's where you want to try to see if you can come as close as you can to how the race is run.
And you're literally the third of the three visitors tonight. You're the third to say that. How did you expect the race to unfold, and what happened, and where are the points in differentiation that may point out where a horse benefited or where a horse was held back by either circumstance, incidents, race flow, bias, whatever may have worked for and against?
Yeah, every one of those things that has previously been stated is very important. Your pace, one of the things that I think is very important is your interior fraction. I learned that in the harness game, that your interior fractions, brush is a terminology in harness racing where you use your horse. They don't use it in thoroughbred racing so much. You brush, you use your horse for position, and most harness horses, good harness horses have two brushes in them. So they utilize their horse early for position, and they maintain their position, and then they utilize their horse late for the last quarter. You see that a lot in European racing. You use your horse for position, and then they sit and they hold their position and they use their horse late. In California racing and in U.S. racing, it's a lot. It's a faster pace of racing. It's one geared for speed. So it's much tougher to get that kind of a trip. To where ideal trip where you can use your horse, relax, and then use your horse again. But the key is to be in position, have your horse in position to where you can utilize them in the final quarter, the final eighth of a mile, to where you can basically then get to the wire first.
There you go. Jeremy.
I like that Terry's talking about the multiple runs and that harness angle of things, because in thoroughbred races and the two-turn races, often you'll see a horse make one run and then maybe get stopped or have to tap on the brakes. And only the good ones seem to have a second run. And when you have a horse who can make more than one run, I think that's a great trip note to make, that this horse made two or three runs in the same race. It may not result in a victory, but it will show... it will show that there's a lot of talent there and that the horse may have something a little bit more than what we're seeing. If a horse wins, let's say, a $15,000 claimer making a couple runs in the race, you usually don't see it at that class level. And you might think that horse is capable of doing a little bit more on a class rise next time. And so, most of the times, and I think Terry might agree with this, when a thoroughbred makes their one run, that's it. That's all they have, and they don't have that second run.
I agree, Jeremy, and especially for a horse on the lead. When I look at pace and when I judge pace and when I watch races, to me the most important thing in thoroughbred racing is if a horse on the lead is relaxed. If a horse is relaxed and clear on the lead, then he can utilize his energy and take it much further than if he's pressured early on the lead or if he's not relaxed. And that's the most important thing in thoroughbred racing, especially if you have a horse, if your pace makes the race, is what they say. And I think that holds more true than it does in harness racing or in longer races. But pace makes the race most of the time in U.S. racing.
When it comes to trip handicapping, Terry, is there a particular type of race where you find it to be more effective, sprints and routes or turf and dirt, or are you looking at every race individually?
I'm looking at every race individually. Once again, I hark back to some of the terminology that I carry over to the thoroughbreds, and I use that in harness racing, you use parked. You parked with cover or parked without cover. And in thoroughbreds, I look at the same thing, although you never hear anybody in thoroughbreds say, a horse is too wide. Is he too wide by himself, or is he too wide behind horses? He doesn't have to lose his momentum. Is he too wide and maintaining his momentum, or is he too wide by himself without drafting behind another horse? It's so important that a horse not loses momentum when he is in the trip handicapping, that he maintains his momentum without losing that stride and being able to relax, because being able to relax is the key for a thoroughbred to utilize his energy.
So you're more apt to take a horse with a wide trip than one down inside who may get stopped. You'd rather have the ground lost than the momentum lost?
Absolutely. When you're down inside four horses, and especially with you have quality jockeys, very seldom will they give up the rail. And now, if we're going to talk about trip handicapping on the turf, it's a whole different story, because trip handicapping on the turf, especially when you have temporary rails, I think temporary rails make a completely different scenario as far as how a race can be run. Because if you have a rails of 10 or 20 or 30, it so greatly impacts the horses that are coming from behind or the horses on the lead. So that all you have to take all of that into consideration when you're handicapping. Where have they set the rails today? At Gulfstream Park, they can set the rails from 80 feet to 140 feet. So you have a variation of almost seven different rails settings, and you have to take that into consideration for each race. How far? That's one of the first things that when Gulfstream started, I harped about. You're not putting the rail distance where the rails are set at, and it took almost 2 years before they finally would put the rail settings into the form as to where the rails were set for each race.
Generally speaking, that rail position, the further out it is, how does it impact the race?
I think that the further out the rails are, the speed usually is at an advantage, because the horses control more, and the horses from behind do not have the luxury to be able to make those turns without tightening up and make those big sweeping turns. And especially at Santa Anita, when those turns coming down the hill, when they tighten up, it's like running down a tunnel, and then they turn across the dirt, and then they're coming for home, and they're running right into the rails. They have to basically go out four or five lanes, or else they're running right into the rails set up for the stretch run. So they have to accommodate that, so it's very easy to get stopped. Or when they do cross the dirt, a lot of times the horses will bear out. So it's just the luck. Then you're just going strictly on luck. If you're going to stick in there and stay on the inside and hope the rail opens, you could have the best horse. Then it's just a matter of luck. You stay in there, and you know, Calvin Burrell wins all his races. Burrell on the rail. He never left the rail, so he lost a lot of races, but he won a lot of races. But I want a horse that'll be clear, especially if I think that he has a good late kick. I would rather have him too wide and clear than down on the inside strangling his horse looking for room.
Well, let's shorten things up a little bit here over the last 10 minutes or so of the segment here, Terry. Let's talk a little AQHA trip handicapping. You captained the national poll, the AQHA Racing Horse Player Now national poll that we've been honored to take part in over the last 5 years, and you captained that poll and solicit all the ballots from the national experts each week and help put that poll together for us. You've got a keen eye for the quarters. Well, what are some of the real stickling points when it comes to trip handicapping with the short liners?
Well, the quarter horse is naturally the break. The break is crucial. because here you've got fractious animals that are usually more high strung than the thoroughbreds, and they're in the gate and a split second, if they veer in or veer out, or if they're bumped off stride, just a second, if they can't recover at 350 yards, 400 yards, whereas a thoroughbred has 3/4 of a mile or a mile to recover, quarter horses don't. So your break is so extremely important. And what I look for in thoroughbreds or in quarter horse handicapping is if I see a horse that has trouble, I think the gallop out is so important. Did the horse gallop out? Did he have run after the race? Because I think that then I can go back and I look at a lot of races. I can slow motion the start, and I see if a horse, did he veer up? Did he veer in? And you have to break straight. Quarter horse racing is so critical at the start.
And what about the action coming down the stretch? As you watch the head-on horses that kind of get in, kind of get out, are you only restricting kind of the horses you want, those who can run straight on a string, or do you... do you concede a little bit of the veering in and out?
Well, concede veering in and veering out, it depends if they're clear. I mean, they can veer in, but was their path taken? If they veer in and their path is taken, the game's over. They can veer in and continue running, then they're okay. As long as their path isn't taken and they're not pinballed or squeezed, then they can continue on. That's the whole thing. You can see it in the All-American, in the trials. You see these horses that right now, I mean, we have in our older poll, we have Moonist on top, who is just a complete pro, absolutely a pro, and Zooming Effortlessly is our runner-up right now in our older poll. And now we're just getting into the two-year-olds, and Teller Baja is the number one unanimous leader in our two-year-old poll, and we're just getting started, and Just Call Me Carter is ranked number two. So this is a real exciting time for quarter horse racing because you've got your older pros that they know what it's all about, but still they have to have the trip. And you've got your younger two-year-olds, which is so exciting in quarter horse racing. But that takes, you see that in the All-American. You can see the best horse with the fastest qualifying time could get eliminated at the start in a heartbeat. And that's where the race is won or lost, right at the start.
How many races does it take for a horse for you to start to think they may be a troublemaker? You know, the horses who constantly break in or out or stumble at the start, can't get away. You have to be forgiving to be a quarter horse handicapper. Nobody gets a clean trip all 10 runs in their past performances. But, you know, I mean, how much is too much for you when you're glancing down through the PPs that you just say, boy, this horse is a bad actor?
That's where I take the trainer into consideration. That's why the trainers that are the top trainers in the quarter horse industry, as in the thoroughbred industry, as in the quarter horse industry, they're there year after year after year. If I see a quarter horse and he's in a good barn and he consistently cannot get away from the gate, then I will, after two or three starts, he's just a bad actor. And if I see him in a bad barn, then I give him a little bit more leeway, or a barn that's not as successful as other barns. I think quarter horse racing, the trainer, that's why you see Baffert and Lucas and these trainers that have gone on to success, you very seldom see their horses bad actors at the gate. Their horses break from the gate. They're relaxed at the gate. Their manners are good from the gate. And they learn that from the quarter horse industry. So they have an edge up, especially in the younger horses and the younger races.
What about the outside of the quarter horse gate? They line up across the track. For fans who haven't seen a lot of quarter horse races, they're all in the straightaway, essentially. There are some that are around the hook, but 95% of them are on the straightaway. The far outside gate, is that advantageous or disadvantageous?
For younger horses, I don't think younger horses have a tendency to go out when they break. They'll break out. And so if you're a younger horse, I would rather be in the middle of the pack, or I would rather be inside of a horse. Older horses, experienced horses, I prefer an outside gate. I think it's really advantageous. But for younger horses, the outside post is, 9 times out of 10, they'll veer out. But the good ones will straighten right away. They'll veer out, but they'll straighten in the next stride and get right into their stride. And the jockey also. So, yeah, to me, handicapping is jockey, trainer, and horse. You've got to have, if you have the combination of all three of top, they separate themselves. The jockey will separate themselves. I heard Andy saying and John saying their opinions on a jockey or a horse and a trainer and a jockey change. I think jockeys are very important. I give a lot of credence in a jockey change to a top jockey and a trainer change to a top trainer. So I think that's very important.
When you look at those distance races, we said most of the races are on the straight, but we do run some races at 870 yards and even up to 1,000 yards around the hook at some mile racetracks in the AQHA game. Any horses tend to stretch out better than others for you when you're looking from that straightaway to running a route race in the AQHA game? Anything you're looking for on those races around the hook?
What I'm looking for is their stride, and if they can get into stride, and once again, the jockey, I think, is very important. The jockey, the top jockeys will keep their, be able to take the turn on the horse, and the horse will not run off the track. Being able to change leads for a quarter horse on the turn is really, really difficult and tricky. And so I look for the horse that can change leads, and I'll be very insightful when I watch workouts. If I watch workouts on quarter horses, horses that are galloping and can change leads usually can take the hook. If they can't change leads, they're gonna just go right off the track because they're gonna go into that turn so fast.
In the straightaways, we talked about those races, you know, just 300 yards, 400, 440 along those lines. But from inside to outside on the racetrack, biases can develop in quarter horse racing. And for thoroughbred players, they're thinking bias in terms of is the track favoring speed or closers. Sometimes there's a rail bias. But from left to right across the track, from rail to outer rail in quarter horse racing, the variance in the track can differ throughout the course of an evening and on particular nights of the week. Do you look at post positions and where horses are winning in races and try to apply that into some sort of trip handicap or bias handicapping, or do you not pay much attention to that in the quarter horse ranks?
No, absolutely. I don't want to be down on the inside because the inside, if you don't break, you can very easily end up into the wood, into the rail, and you're not going to get a clear break. And you don't want to be too far outside if you're a young horse. Depends on the size of the field and depends on your experience racing. But post position makes a big difference. And if you're right in the middle, you're in the advantageous spot, especially if you can break. A lot of times it has to do with the break. If a horse veers in or veers out, that's the key. Yeah, right at the start, the key is and you want to be able to just get away from there and get into your first stride without without losing too much distance or ground. But the inside is the worst to me. I would much rather be outside than inside.
Now, Steve, Terry's our West Coast handicapper. He and Jeff Nahill for the Buzz Report for Horse Player Now. So he's got a strong suit on these California West Coast horses. Like Terry, I'd also like to think what you guys thought of Exaggerator versus Nyquist Round 2. Steve?
Well, I think this was a race, personally, that falls into the category of if you ran it 100 times, you'd get probably 48 wins for Nyquist and 47 wins for Exaggerator. This was a tactical misstep by the O'Neill camp. I think they overplayed their confidence in their hand with Nyquist here, and they really did not allow him to run a race that gave him the best chance to win. And I think that'll be a lasting conclusion, at least from me, coming out of this, not to take away from another good performance by Exaggerator, who runs his race repeatedly. But all you have to do is look at those PPs and say to yourself, where do I want to be early in this race with four other possible speeds? And the answer wasn't in front. The answer was to take back a little bit, and you know, you could do the exact same thing you did in the Derby, which was brake clean, give yourself some choices, let a couple of speeds run off and tuck in behind them. If you were the best horse coming in, and you got him beat.
What do you say, TT?
You know, the greatest thing is if you watch a race underneath a TV and you have 10 people watching the race, you're going to get 10 different opinions. My opinion in the race is that I agree up to the first turn. I think he was writing to instructions that they were going to send him to get position. They were not going to get caught. And I think the key in the race to me was the four horse, Awesome Speed, the Goldberg horse on the outside. I think he kept just enough pressure on him on the, you know, right off his hind that Gutierrez could not take his horse and relax. And that was the whole key. So he yep. got into a duel with Uncle Lino, and that cost him the race because the whole key was he never was able to relax and sit there for a quarter of a mile or a half a mile. He was into a drive the whole way, and I think the outside horse kept him from doing that. He didn't want anybody on the outside of him. If you'll notice, he never really, when he won his races, he was always clear. He was not. There was never anybody on the outside. He wants to be clear. So when the Goldberg horse put just enough pressure on him into that first turn to the half mile, in my opinion, that it cost him not the ability to relax and let Lino go and sit back off of him a length. And I think that's where the race was lost.
And one of the dangers of drawing the three-hole with the speed in the four, the speed in the one, you could get stuck in that pickle there. And somehow that's where trip handicapping often begins, with the post-position draw and where the horses are going to leave from and where the other speed in the race may be. We talk about reviewing videos all the time, but one of the first things you want to do is look at the post-position draw and see who it may impact, Steve, as that's your first look at the lineup in any given race when the entries come out and how it could all set up.
Well, and here's a name for Terry that he'll appreciate. I was at the draw with Johnny DeSantis, and Johnny, the first thing he said was, I may not know a lot, he said, but I don't think this draw does any favors for Nyquist at all. And I, you know, I had the same kind of confidence going in, I think, as Doug O'Neill did. And I thought, they can let the speeds go. And, you know, they, knowing the Cherry Wine in the one hole was going to absolutely dawdle, I thought they could set up shop on the rail and basically let the speeds go, save all the ground, and tip out whenever necessary. And instead, they wanted to be in a position to take it to the field. And Terry's 100% right about what was going on with Javion Toledo. You can see Gutierrez turns and barks at Toledo. And absolutely screams at him about either the bump that they took or to get off of him. And then as soon as they dispatch Awesome Speed, here came Stradivari, Terry. There wasn't two strides that Awesome Speed was packing it in, and Stradivari was on him on the outside.
Right, exactly. That was my take, Steve, is that they wanted to get him clear, but he was never able to relax. And so he wasn't able to get clear and relax, and that was his instructions, and that's what his game plan was, especially the way the track was playing. And they just didn't want to take a chance being down on the inside. And Kent he knows the track. He made a great ride. And just to, in hindsight, 2020, just going back, Kent said that in the Derby he was stopped. And everybody said, oh, no, you just got beat. Well, Jerry Bailey and Randy Moss on TV, they disagreed. They said, oh, no, that the interference didn't cost Ken anything, and they showed it in slow motion. And you talk about trouble and trip handicapping and how much trouble it did cost him, and Kent was right. You could see that he had to, in slow motion, when they showed the Derby, they showed that he had to take up, lose momentum, and lose a step, and he was still closing on Nyquist at the end, and they said, no, that didn't cost him the race. But in hindsight, Kent was right, and they had the confidence. They had all the confidence in the world going in, and they were telling everybody that that, you know, they were the ones to beat. They didn't take anything away from Nyquist, but they sure were confident all the way up to the race, and they're confident now going to the Belmont. They're saying, bring them on. And well, Nyquist won't be there now.
No. No, but they certainly set up a fascinating second half of the year, whether it starts at Belmont or whether you consider it from Haskell, Travers, and Pennsylvania Derby. If that's your second half of the three-year-old year, certainly. You know, certainly a lot of racing yet to come. Terry, appreciate having you join us this evening on both the quarter side and for the route goers, and continued success.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Terry.
Terry Terrell, and of course earlier Andy Serling, and we started everything with John Doyle, OpticsEQ.com, and Caton was with us, and myself, and Jeremy, and Jerry on the applet, and everybody that has had a very active evening chatting away too, talking about the conversation here tonight, as well as what went on this past weekend. And Jeremy, we'll be back soon.
Absolutely. We've got a biography next week, and then we'll hit a little NYRA handicapping profile for Belmont Stakes Week. So we've got a lot to look forward to here over the next couple weeks, and the final jewel of the Triple Crown still to come. But for tonight's Night School, great discussion and a great group of guests, and we appreciate everybody for joining us.
Back with you tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock at the races, as we continue to distill everything that went on at Pimlico and more. Paul Matisse will join us, as well as Sid Fernando and Pete Fornatel, and some more trainer guests from the weekend, some successful performances. I hope to talk to Jerry Hollendorfer for tomorrow, too, about Songbird's nice work. Going to send you out into this Tuesday night, and thank you for joining us on Night School. Thank Casey back in the studio. We'll see you next week.
Night School is brought to you by Woodbine Entertainment, home of the prestigious Queen's Plate. Follow the countdown to the 157th Queen's Plate on July 3rd. And by Mountain Air Casino Racetrack and Resort, conducting live racing 5 nights per week, April through November. First post, Saturday through Wednesday, is 7 p.m. Eastern. Special consideration for Night School is provided by HorsePlayerNow.com Buzz Report, where 10% of every purchase goes directly to the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation to assist former racehorses.
Time to get buzzed. The Horse Player Now Buzz Report brings top handicappers from around the world, from our email box to yours. Our starting nine includes such renowned horse players as Caton Bradar, Brian W. Spencer, Jerry Schottenkirk, Candace Hare, Brian Natto, Terry Terrell, Jeff Nahill, DC Dino Herrera, and Jeremy Plunk. Put your starting nine together every single day with daily, monthly, and quarterly plans that reduce the price to as low as just $2 a day. We say it's our eyes and your prize, and we promise nothing but the best. Honesty and trust, no other promises. Pick up the buzz today.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Looking for some excitement? Get away to Mountaineer Casino Racetrack and Resort. The gaming action sizzles, from slots to video poker to hot table game action. There's more winning excitement at Mountaineer. Stay in our newly renovated hotel rooms. Enjoy new menus in 6 restaurants. Heat up your nights with live entertainment. Play a round of golf. Enjoy the thrills of live thoroughbred racing or relax in our spa. Get in on it all at Mountaineer. Mountaineer Casino Racetrack and Resort. West Virginia Lottery, West Virginia Lottery Table Games.